The story of John Stephen Aquari goes back to October 1968. When the Olympic Games were held in Latin America, it was one of the hottest Sunday afternoons in Mexico City, and the men's 26-mile marathon started at 3 o'clock p.m. local time. Not a good choice. Out of 74 participants, 17 were unable to finish the race. At 7 o'clock p.m., other track events were still going on in the stadium. It had been almost an hour since all the marathon runners had crossed the finish line. Then suddenly, a lone runner emerged through the stadium gate, jogging a few steps, hobbling a few steps, and walking a few steps. The runner was wearing the colors of Tanzania. His name was John Stephen Aquari. He had fallen down several times and had hurt himself badly. His leg was bandaged in two places. Aquari was repeatedly asked to quit the race, but he refused. He would fall, then drag himself along, then he would jog a little and then walk a little. He finished the marathon limping over the line. When he crossed the finish line, he received a huge applause and cheers from the crowd. Later, when he was asked the reason he didn't just quit instead of enduring such torment, he replied, "My country did not send me 10,000 miles just to start the race. They sent me to finish the race." Aquari never won an Olympic gold medal, but he stands as one of the greatest examples of determination, endurance, and literally going the distance. This example also displays the contrast between living for instant rewards and instant gratification, or seeing the advantage in living with future rewards in mind, living for delayed gratification. Do we live with the expectation that our troubles should vanish about as soon as they disappear? Do we fail to see how God can use problems, difficulties, or even disasters to mold us into someone more like His Son? In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 8, we're told that Jesus learned obedience by the things that he suffered. In verses 8 and 9, the text says, "Though he was a son, he learned obedience by the things he suffered, and having been perfected, he became the source or the author of salvation for all who obey him." The very Son of God was perfected by sufferings. While we may sometimes think we shouldn't have to suffer some of the same much lesser difficulties that countless others have had to suffer, do we honestly think our difficulties are so much worse than what millions of others have gone through? Of all people, it is Christians who should know that God can use tragedies to mold us to be more like Jesus. Of all people, Christians should not be so short-sighted as to focus on the here and now without looking further ahead to what God is trying to accomplish for us in the future, for us and in us in the future, what He has in mind over the long haul. How can I possibly have a positive influence on other people in terms of teaching them to value the spiritual over the carnal if I can't see further than some personal tragedy in my own life? How can I tell a person who's aged or who's lost much of their physical abilities in some tragic accident that God can use them to glorify Him right now, and that they can live a meaningful, joy-filled life right now, and that God has something magnificent in store for them later, if I'm so tied to this world that I can't look at things from a spiritual perspective, and I'm therefore incapable of looking at life in terms of going the distance? In Romans chapter 2 and verse 7, the Apostle Paul states that eternal life awaits those who by patient continuance in doing good seek for glory, honor, and immortality. The idea of patience carries with it the element of steadfastness and endurance. To show patience in the face of continued struggle is something God calls us to. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 20 through 23, Peter says, "What credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example, that you should follow his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return, when he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously. Have you ever played chess and your opponent is clearly going to beat you? There's no hope. Do you keep playing in agony or do you just topple your queen? When the odds are stacked so badly against you, the hardest thing to do is to keep on trying. And the easiest thing to do is to become bitter and to give up. I'm not a fan of football. In fact, my view of football of a football game is aptly expressed by Grumpy Cat when she says, "I hope both teams lose." But Super Bowl 51 serves as an excellent example to make this point about hanging in there even when times are tough, about going the distance. Super Bowl 51 was played in Houston, Texas on February 5th, 2017. The Atlanta Falcons were playing the New England Patriots, and lots of people were rooting for the Falcons and against the Patriots. At the end of the first quarter, the score was Falcons 0, Patriots 0. At the end of the second quarter, it was Falcons 21, Patriots 3. At the end of the third quarter, Falcons 28, Patriots 9. At the end of the fourth quarter, it was Falcons 28, Patriots 28. In overtime, it was the Falcons 28 and the Patriots 34. To have gained 19 points in the fourth quarter when all the odds were against them was a remarkable feat. The patient person takes the long view. They know that if they just keep on plowing ahead, if they just keep trying, things will get better. But the reality is, sometimes things don't get better, but we need to keep pressing on anyway. Speaking of Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Sarah, in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 13 through 16, we read, "These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them." These people lived lives of self-denial, lives of taking the high road, lives of living for higher motives than fulfilling one's selfish, fleshly desires. But why? Why practice self-denial? Why practice self-discipline in your life? Why not just do whatever you feel like doing? Because we are convinced that there is more to life than just this life. In Luke chapter 9, verses 23 through 25, Jesus said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very soul?" Do we take a long-term view or a short-term view of God's blessings? In the short term, doing right doesn't always work. That is, from man's judgment, from the standpoint of man's perspective. In the short term, doing the right thing can be costly. It can cost you some ridicule. It can cost you some friends. It can cost you your job. It can cost you a lot of things. Consider Paul's life from a short-term perspective. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 8 and 9, he says, "We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." In the 11th chapter of the same letter, verses 24 through 27, he says, five times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was pelted with stones. Three times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, at the sea, and in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. But Paul brings all this into the long-term perspective. In the fourth chapter again, verses 16 through 18, he says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. We need to be careful that we don't take an accusing attitude toward God because he doesn't handle our problems the way that we think he should. We tend to say, well, Lord, I tried it your way and it didn't work. In fact, things have actually gotten worse. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 1 through 4, he says, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude, because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they do not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. For you have spent enough time in the past doing what pagans choose to do, living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. They are surprised that you do not join them in their reckless, wild living, and they heap abuse on you. Doing God's will may not always be effective by our standards of judgment. So what do we do? Does God have to keep us from suffering something really tragic? Otherwise, we will turn our back on him? Is the promise of heaven not enough to keep us faithful to God? Job thought it was. Job 13, verse 15, he said, though he slay me, yet I will trust him. In chapter 19, verses 25 and 26, he says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in the end he will stand on the earth, and after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. Think of those in Hebrews chapter 11 who were tortured and sawed in two, yet they remained faithful to the Lord through it all. Hebrews 11, verses 35 through 38 says, women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might even gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and living in caves and in holes in the ground. Are we in it for the long haul? Have we committed ourselves to the Lord with a view to going the distance? Or are we serving God only because doing so has some short-term benefits, whatever those may be? Positive mental benefits and positive health benefits have been touted by some. Studies have shown that those who go to church regularly, as it's commonly said, and those who are therefore devoted to their religious views live cleaner lives, healthier lives, they have less stress, much lower percentage of divorce, and the list continues. It can be helpful, however, to remember Moses. Hebrews 11, verses 24 through 27, we read, by faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. In Job chapter 1, verse 9, Satan implied that Job was serving God only for some kind of gain or benefit. And Satan asked God, "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Do we fear God for nothing? Do we continue to serve God even when we determine that it's more costly to do so from a worldly perspective? What does God have to give us in this life to keep us on his side? Would our faith start wavering if we became financially destitute? Are we middle-class Christians? By that I mean, are we willing to serve the Lord as long as things are going pretty well for us? There's an amusing and insightful little book called The Screwtape Letters, written by C.S. Lewis. It was first published in 1942. It's written in the form of a series of letters. It's a fictitious correspondence between a senior demon named Screwtape and his incompetent nephew named Wormwood. All of the letters are from Screwtape to Wormwood, and the subject of the correspondence is a new convert to Christianity. Screwtape is trying to help Wormwood tempt this man away from the Lord. He's trying to keep him from going to heaven. He's trying to lure him away from serving Christ. In counseling the junior demon, one line in the book warns, "The greatest danger we face is when all hope is gone in a man's life, yet he keeps on doing right anyway." That's what we need. We need that kind of patience. We need that kind of endurance. We need that kind of commitment. We need to possess that in order to be able to go the distance.